How does tokenization impact energy and mobility sectors? What are key considerations for financial institutions in choosing their custodial solutions for digital assets? What trends will shape tokenization in the next 1 to 2 years? We'll cover all this and more in this conversation with John Kallion, CEO at Riddle & Code, a blockchain interface solutions provider.
Welcome to Web3 Opportunities Podcast, hosted by Kelvin Wong, creator of JP Morgan's Strategic Solutions Group. If you come from a non-technical background and want to learn how blockchain technologies disrupt industries and want to discover investment and career opportunities in the crypto economy, you've come to the right place. In each episode, Kelvin chats with some of the most innovative founders, investors, and thought leaders in blockchain and crypto space. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said on the podcast should be taken as financial advice. Now let's dive in.
Hi everyone, I'm Kelvin Wong. My guest today is John Kallion, CEO at Riddle & Code. John, thank you for being here and welcome.
Thanks for having me, Kelvin.
John, please tell us a bit about your background and your journey into crypto.
I'd be happy to. I've had a career focused on the convergence of technology and business. Generically, and have spent time in the e-commerce field, a lot of telecommunication systems, financial service systems, but I started my career back in the dot-com days. So there's always been a mixture of large company and startups in my background, or places where I feel comfortable, probably more on the entrepreneurial side of things. And so, yeah, so that's 20 plus years of being around software engineering, software products, large scale enterprise systems. My crypto into journey really began, though, 6 or 7 years ago, and got very formal when I was initially hired as vice president of blockchain at Deutsche Telekom, based here in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting journey. So what are you most excited about with respect to the blockchain ecosystem now?
When I first dove into this, I was focused really on, the basic tenets of the technology. That's usually where I start thinking about products and business modeling. What can a technology do for a current or new business? And so I took that same approach with blockchain. What is it about blockchain that could make a system faster, more efficient, reduce margins or increase margins, just some basic business principles? What can you do with blockchain?
Mm-hmm.
And initially, it was really focused on the telecommunications industry because I was brought into Deutsche Telekom to start thinking about it and leading them on the blockchain journey, really. So what got me excited at first was this really basic concept of trust and identity. Blockchain promises that certain entities, whether it's a machine, a person, or even a service, can have a trusted identity. And everything associated with that identity can be trusted without any human intervention. So that's what first got me excited about how can you apply this technology.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us a bit about Riddle & Co. What problems are you and your team solving?
So my interaction with Riddle & Co. started while I was at Deutsche Telekom. Besides working on blockchain, I was also the leader of the research and development group. And so I was charged with thinking 3, 5, 7 years into the future.
Mm.
And one of the things I did was to partner with some, cutting edge startups that were working on blockchain in particular. And Riddle & Code was one of those firms. What they bring and what we bring now is this convergence of the physical with the digital. So we onboard industrial machines to the Web3. And in those early days, the first machines we onboarded to Web3 were electric scooters. So we ran some pilots, essentially giving a hardware wallet inside of an electric scooter, and it now had a trusted identity, right? And what could you do with that?
Yeah.
So these were some experiments we ran on it. And basically you could walk up to a scooter with your phone, jump on and ride off with very little interaction. It was a lot of fun. But behind the scenes was, you know, bringing together humans and machines and the trusted data, payment systems, et cetera. So that's what really began the journey for me with Riddle and Code. And today it's a lot more sophisticated. You know, for 5 years, the team has been doing research and development, working in the energy sector, mobility, micro mobility, et cetera, where you're able to really enjoy the benefits of decentralization by bringing industrial machines onto the Web3 via the hardware wallet. And this is where I would leave you with. The hardware wallet is the unique thing that Riddle and Code is bringing to the industry.
Very interesting. We'll dig into that in a while. Now let's start with the basics. What is tokenization?
What is tokenization? Sure. You know, for us, it's bringing the value of a machine into the digital space, right? So via a token, you can represent the utility or the value of a machine in our case, right? So I'll be a little more specific about what we do at Riddle and Code. We can talk more broadly about tokenization, but it's really a trusted value representation of, in our case, of something physical, right? So by tokenizing a physical asset, you can present the utility to for a wide variety of reasons, whether you want to finance this asset. If you tokenize it, you can sell tokens and bring value in, and you can represent the future output of a device. So that's how we really think about tokenization. And that's how you start a journey. And that's how you bootstrap a tokenized microeconomy, which is something else we talk a lot about at Riddle and Code.
Yeah, that's exciting. What are the pros and cons of tokenization?
That's funny. I don't think about the cons so often, but certainly the pros. You know, we feel that, you know, our strongest conviction is that the future is going to have, you know, all of these interconnected microeconomies based on tokens. Mm-hmm. So the energy industry can represent, you know, essentially electricity or electrons via tokens, right? Or the automobile industry can represent all the data it generates via tokens. The agricultural industry, the defense industry, the medical industry, all the utility from these different industries can be represented through tokens. And that's where you have value. And now you can be, you know, interacting these different values through tokens. So that's the world we see and have conviction on. So the pros are, you know, more efficiency with different systems interacting, efficiency in finance, efficiency in data transfer. You have, you know, immutable, transparent identity of machines and industries interacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but really what you're going to see is more an evolution, not a revolution, in how systems interact, how industries interact. And underscoring all of this, Kelvin, is decentralization, right?
Yeah.
You can have all of these new peer-to-peer relationships without, you know, intermediaries. And that's a big reason why we get so excited about blockchain and decentralization.
Right. Why is trustful data provenance important, John?
So here it really can be industry specific. I mean, if I think generically, it's if you want to make data useful, if you want to monetize data, you better be sure that you can trust the data.
Mm-hmm.
So in any system, whether you're using blockchain or a more traditional database, you know, we have a common expression, garbage in, garbage out. How do you maintain that the data you're putting into a system is true and useful? And that's where we would say, if you start at the source and you ensure that the integrity of the data is 100% correct, you then can prove provenance, right? In ways that you couldn't in the past or today. So for example, you know, we work in the materials space where companies like Evonix and BASF want to prove that the raw materials that they have in a supply chain are legitimate and useful. And so they can use the systems that we provide them to start that journey of trust. Mm-hmm. So provenance is extremely important when you want to say something came from here, it exists, and it ended up over there, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now let's go to the financial services industry. Why do financial institutions need custodial solutions for digital assets?
Sure, a variety of reasons, right? So number one, as an institution, if you're holding a large amount of any type of token, it most likely has a high financial value. So you would want to ensure that you have the highest security in managing those digital tokenized assets, meaning you wouldn't want you know, one person, for instance, to be able to move a large amount of value from one wallet to another. So number one, you want to have accountability. You want to have multi-signature capabilities, meaning numerous points of contact before you move any value from one system to another, one wallet to another. You also want to be able to provide your accounting teams with all the transactions. So these are a couple of the primary reasons why, you know, a secure custodial solution is important for larger industries and the treasuries and, you know, exchanges, financial institutions, et cetera. So, you know, being able to see how value was transferred, who approved it, what is your approval process? These things all need to be sophisticated, just as if, you know, you're going to move large amounts of fiat money. And then second, you need to be able to audit, you know, your transactions. So these are the reasons why, you know, an enterprise level custodial solution is important.
And what are different types of custodial solutions for digital assets?
Sure. Well, I mean, you have what we refer to as hot wallets and cold wallets, right? You have a hot wallet, which is a software wallet holding your private keys that is connected to the internet, right? An application on your phone or maybe on your desktop, versus a cold wallet, which is a way that you can store your private keys offline, right? Not connected to the internet. Mm-hmm. So those are two basic concepts for anybody to understand first when we talk about, you know, holding digital assets. And, you know, furthermore, where are those digital keys, you know, the encryption keys you need with which to interact with any blockchain, where are they held? Where are they generated? Is it hardware or software? And so to get the most secure, you start with hardware solutions. You have secure elements essentially within a computer that generate and hold your private keys. We consider this to be the most secure way to do so. And that is a fundamental technology that we create and design and produce at Riddle & Code.
Mm-hmm. What are key considerations for institutions in choosing their custodial solutions, John?
Sure. Well, I would start with, you know, what's the regulatory governance concerning, you know, where you are, what country are you in, what are the needs to meet of a regulatory body if you're holding large amounts of tokens. So whatever system you're using to hold them, is it, you know, compliant with local or, you know, international regulation? Mm-hmm. Often, you know, the financial companies need to comply with a lot of regulation. So how is your solution holding your tokens compliant, right? I think that's one big consideration. Two is, where does the data sit, right? Is it sitting in somebody's iPhone? Is it sitting in a cluster of computers locally, or is it in a cloud? What's the right mix of these things? Who has access to that would be another consideration. Mm-hmm. So that's where you kind of start your journey when you're thinking about how do we want to design and implement a custodial solution. And who do I go to for that?
Right. Makes sense. Let's say a private bank wants to offer custody for their clients on digital assets. how do you help them?
Well, what we would like to do is, you know, the solution that Riddle and Code has is quite sophisticated. It's meant for, you know, treasury departments or digital exchanges that are either exchanging cryptocurrencies and other digital assets. And, you know, banking partners, we would want them to resell what we offer. So for high value customers, we feel the offering we have is the most secure. So you have a combination of local data, cloud data, you have hardware in your hands as an institution to manage all this and have the highest levels of security.
Mm-hmm. John, you mentioned that you and your team work actively with companies in the energy and mobility sector. Tell us, how does tokenization impact these industries?
Well, let's start with energy. One of the primary use cases that we focused on are the build out and future productivity of sustainable energy generation. So solar power, wind power, et cetera. By using tokenization, an electricity producer can, number one, pre-finance the build out of sustainable energy production, like a solar power plant. And what you're able to do with tokenization is make it very easy to crowdsource the funding and start bringing in the community members themselves into the financing and consumption of the energy from these plants. So what we're talking about is private-public partnerships. Now, regulatory bodies around the world are starting to push the energy community to create energy communities to involve citizens. And we find that by tokenizing the build out and the future productivity of a solar power plant, it's a great way to get community involvement. So when I say community, I mean, you know, the city of Vienna has now tokenized some of the build out of a solar power plant. 30,000 citizens have participated. 30,000 citizens hold tokens representing the future electricity output of a solar power plant. This is what we're referring to as bootstrapping a token-based economy.
Right.
Right. So the output of the solar power plant, the electrons, is now valued in a token. And I can hold that token as a citizen of Vienna. So hopefully that's giving you an idea of what we're generating here and what our infrastructure provides.
Interesting. This is a good way for people in the community to participate in local renewable energy projects that they are passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, traditionally, the energy company would go to a financial service company, a bank, and issue a bond. And then they would build something, and then they would produce electricity, and they would sell it. Well, now you can get the citizens to fund it. And what they get most excited about, of course, is, you know, we're at a time in this world where sustainable renewable energy is important. Yet it's expensive, right? We're still at the, I would say, it's quite nascent industry right now. Sustainable, renewable, green energy. But by getting the citizens to participate, you're solving one of the problems, which is, oh, it's expensive. Well, if the citizens are willing and have the inertia in them to go and help fund this, you now have a financing mechanism that didn't exist before. And frankly, it's actually cheaper than going to a traditional banking system. You're getting the funding directly from the customers, and you can cut out the financial institution. This is classic disintermediation. So we find this quite exciting. When you get down to look at the actual numbers, you can save some basis points from the traditional lending institutions and either reinvest that, give that back to your customers, or keep it yourself for profit if you like. So that's a very specific example of how tokenization affects the financing of the build out of energy systems.
Very interesting. Now, tell us a bit about the mobility sector as well, John.
Sure. So again, our focus is on sustainable renewable systems. Solar power plants are one of them, of course, but electric vehicles and their charging systems, And the cities and countries that want to promote this is another area. So an electric vehicle produces a lot of data, especially from its batteries. And this data is valuable. Well, now we can tokenize it with our infrastructure. So like the solar power plant use case, in that case, you're tokenizing the future output of electricity. Here, you're tokenizing the output of data from a car. Mm-hmm. And what can you do with that data? Well, you can, you know, speaking about provenance, you can prove where a car is. You can prove how much energy it's using. You can prove those things in combination with the city's requirements to go green, right? So if we use our imaginations, we can now prove that this trusted vehicle is electric. Maybe it can drive in certain streets or maybe park in certain areas, et cetera. You can then connect it to the charging infrastructure as well. You also could potentially connect those solar power plants to the charging to the cars itself. Mm-hmm. And now we see, you know, an interconnectivity here. But again, it all gets down to, you know, proving things, proving the identity of things and the usefulness.
Well, it's very interesting. It's opened up a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, completely agree. And, you know, we think of ourselves more like Levi Strauss. We're providing the picks and shovels for this industry, the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And we're excited to partner up with people who are far more creative and want to bring new use cases and business models to the world, especially based on renewable, sustainable energy.
What trends do you see shaping tokenization in the next, say, 1 to 2 years?
One of the areas we concentrate is, you know, direct involvement of the community into not only energy generation, but use, right? So imagine you could be incentivized to put a solar power panels up on your roof of your house or the balcony of your apartment, and then you connect it directly to a small cell battery storage unit, right? Mm. So now you as an individual or as a peer could start contributing to, you know, community energy systems, right? We start decentralizing the generation of energy. And we now have incentive mechanisms through tokenization to get people really interested, to take action. You know, today, if you wanted to do such a thing, you'd have to one-on-one work it out with the energy company if it's even possible. Mm-hmm. So a focus on creating energy communities is one of the areas we're going to start working on. This is where we see great potential.
Wow, that's very interesting. Before we wrap up, John, what's a key message or takeaway you would like to leave with listeners?
I would say, you know, make sure if you're interested in this topic to really get into your own research, right? It's very easy to read headlines about cryptocurrencies, decentralized finance, and feel that maybe it's not legitimate when it's actually quite the opposite. If you take a few layers off the onion, you dig into what companies like we are doing. We are building out infrastructure for the next 10, 20, 30 years of you know, the evolution in large industry. So look beyond the headlines of what you read about tokens, Bitcoin, et cetera. I think you will find a fascinating world of technologists and businesses like ours.
Indeed. How can listeners learn more about Riddle and Code?
Well, the easiest way would be to find us on Twitter or LinkedIn, pretty easy, and engage with us if you want questions. And from there, you can find a lot of the information that we produce. Of course, we have a website that's pretty easy as well, too.
John, this has been a highly informative conversation. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to share the insights. And if you'd like to find out more, you can find me individually also on Twitter, at Sideshow John. That's pretty easy. And thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. For those of you who have not left a review yet, please go leave a review on Apple iTunes. I'll be so grateful for that. Tell me what topics you would like to hear and who you'd like me to bring onto the show. So head over there, do that now. And I'll see you on the next episode.